You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, I'm Captain Dean, and welcome to another episode. My guest has been in bands Pig Blues, Evans Link, The Pet Detectives, and Four Balter. He is an awesome drummer, and he is currently in an awesome band with me called El Astronauta. He is Corey Link.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Just had some tacos. I'm full. I'm ready for an episode.
I said, Corey, if you want to do a Sound Atlas, you have to come to my house on a Tuesday, have tacos, and do a Sound Atlas recording.
And you had me at tacos.
Exactly. Well, Corey, welcome. And it is your turn, my friend. You have quite a story in the local music scene. And you are one of the few people in the music scene that I have never met until recently.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's a big music scene around here, but it's so vast that...
But it's also kind of small. I mean, it's like it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's a small music scene. So it's strange, I think, to... And I've had this conversation with a few people. It's like you hear names, mm-hmm. you hear of bands, you may not know them or go see them,
right.
But like you'll catch wind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I never knew you or any of the bands you've been in, but yet we know a lot of the same people. And I find that very interesting. Mm-hmm. But you've been... Bowling Green, you're a lifelong Bowling Green.
Born, raised.
That's always the first question.
Yes.
And you're a drummer,
uh-huh.
but yet you do play guitar and bass. And
right, yeah.
You tinker with other instruments.
Absolutely.
But drums is your main instrument.
Yes.
And we'll go to the second question,
uh-huh.
which would be, how did you get into music? And growing up, what were you into? What was around? To get you started on the path of becoming the musician you are?
Well, I think, you know, for most musicians or most people that are involved in music, you know, it's just you grow up and you're surrounded by it. My parents both were really into music. They thought it was important. You know, we had evenings at night where you didn't do anything, but you listened to the radio or you listened to albums.
Right.
And you just kind of... huddled together as a family and just listen to music.
It was like the old-fashioned way of entertainment.
I remember doing little lip sync shows, you know, like to the Beatles. I remember getting one of those old-fashioned popcorn poppers that you put over a fire and they kind of look like a banjo.
You're giving away your age, but you are a child of the 70s and early 80s.
Right, that's right. But yeah, and doing and lip syncing to the Beatles, what is that one called? Rocky Raccoon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I still know every word of that today.
It's a great song.
I could sing it right now. Yeah, but yeah.
And now it's time for Beatle Break.
Beatle Break. No, but I grew up around music, and I've had several members of my extended family, you know, cousins, uncles, things like that.
That were musicians?
That were musicians, okay. Yeah. My mother, my biological mother, she's passed 4 years today, but not today, but this year. She,
I was going to say that would be...
Right. That'd be kind of weird.
Very bad timing.
Bad timing. But no, she was very musical, had a great voice. She sang and played guitar and did, you know, little solo shows in different bars.
So you got a lot of that from her?
I think so.
And your dad was really into music? But didn't play?
Right. He loved music. You know, he's
a big fan. I've met your father.
He
came to one of our band practices recently, and he wasn't critiquing us. He was just, like, praising it. Like, he was giving us advice, mm-hmm. but not criticism, but just more like, that's really cool. I was expecting you to scream at that point when that build came up. And like that's how I looked at it.
If you saw his playlist on his MP3, you'd be amazed. He is so diverse in the music that he listens to. He likes everything.
Yeah,
and
that came across to you.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously, growing up. Talk more about your extended family, like you were saying, though.
Yeah.
Who played? What did they play? And did any of them kind of help guide you?
Yeah. I never really knew him very well because I was really young before before he did pass, but my uncle, he was a studio musician who lived in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
His name was Bob Niven.
Hmm. What did he play on?
I don't know.
Just kind of like B sessions and stuff?
I guess so. I can vaguely remember being over my cousin's house once as a youngster, and I saw an album with a picture of him on it and the guitar. He was like sitting down, and you know, your typical 70s kind of stuff. Yeah. He had a big fro and had some denim on and was holding the guitar.
That's country.
Yeah, but session musician he was, and then my
that's cool. I need to research his name and see what all he's
playing. Now that we're talking about it, I kind of want to.
You need to Google that because they usually have that stuff really well documented down there.
And a cousin of mine that I always looked up to, he's a couple years older than me. He's a musician, and you know, we'd get together during the summers and hang out together for a whole summer. And you know, a couple of my cousins, and he was a bassist. And he had a really good band, and he loved music. And so, you know, it's just, it's here and there, and on my mom's side of the family that I think I really get my musical talent from.
So why did you end up going to the drums, or did you, like, do other stuff prior to being a drummer?
No. I don't know why I gravitated to the drums. Here in town, probably somewhere in between first grade and fourth grade, my next door neighbor, who was a family friend of ours and still is today, he was in a garage band, and I remember going over and watching them practice in their garage. Mm. And he was a drummer.
What was the band? Do you know?
I don't know the name of the band, but there was an old restaurant. You probably know it, the Iron Skillet.
Yeah.
And
where Jim Johnson is today.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. The Iron Skillet. And back in the early 80s, that's where he'd play a lot.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I'm still in touch with that family today. His name's David Finney. And he's seen me drum a few times, and I've talked to him. And I said, you know, you're part of the reason why I play today. Yeah. You know, watching you, it was fascinating to me.
Right.
Watching just all the musicians play.
See, I was 13, uh-huh. and my brother took me to see High Street.
Yeah.
And it was like the first time I'd ever seen a real rock band up close and personal. They were playing a house party in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Edwards is the drummer. So, like you, I was like, I get to tell him now when I see him. I'm like, you realize a lot of this is your fault, right?
Yeah,
because you inspired me so much to do this.
Yeah.
And it just amazes me that there were only like a 5-6 year gap between age, but yet I was 13 and he was 18 or 19, you know, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I think if I really sat and thought about it, I could do a timeline, different parts of my growing up thing. You know, this person was an inspiration to me. This particular thing.
Yeah, that
was
would be easy, but it would be time consuming.
Uh-huh.
But that's cool. I can relate to you on a lot of that. Yeah.
And in the eighth grade.
Because we both grew up in this town.
Yeah.
So I think we probably, again, it's so weird that we never met, but we probably crossed paths through the same locations and things. And,
oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so a lot of the stuff you experienced, I probably experienced too.
Yeah. And I got my first Yamaha drum pad.
Mm.
In the eighth grade,
yeah,
and I beat the crap out of that. I know my parents weren't going to give me a drum kit, but they did give me that, and I think that really got me started at really wanting to play the drums.
You might as well just hit a pie lid.
Yeah,
save you a ton of money.
Yeah, it had four pads on it, and I could change them to all kinds of things.
I can picture exactly what you're talking about because they were a big deal.
Yeah, it was a Yamaha drum pad.
And I was like, this is stupid. They're not in the right. You can't have four little circles. That's not right.
Right.
You have to have things for your feet.
But I think that's what really got me, you know, how to really keep time and the tempo. And I really learned a lot on that, if I go back and think about it.
Obviously, like you said, your house was filled with music, a lot of diversity in music, a lot of diversity from the musicians in your family.
Yeah.
So a lot of that just kind of, you were a sponge, like getting that. When you kind of discovered what you liked and what you were into, is that what kind of really lit the fire to get the drum pad, to get into the world and say, I want to play drums, I want to be a drummer? Mm-hmm. Like, what was your stuff that maybe didn't come from the outer sources of family or records laying around the house? I know you're a Rat fan.
Oh, I love Rat. And that's really got me started.
So, like, Out of the Cellar or...
That, Out of the Cellar and Invasion of Privacy. So, about
84, 85?
Yeah, were the two first Rat tapes that I got.
Yeah.
And, incidentally, from another one of the cousins that I always hung out with,
right.
She gave me those, and I listened to those two, and then I was just like, rock and roll is awesome. I love this, and so
was that your introduction, aside from maybe the classic stuff of that era, the
yeah.
Beatles, the 70s mm-hmm. music?
Right.
When the 80s were coming along, which you and I aren't that far apart, so we experienced the MTV
mm-hmm.
videos, the Quiet Riot, Rat, all that stuff was dominating.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming the same thing kind of happened to you that happened to me. It's just kind of, you saw the pictures, the videos, the posters. It was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
That looks like fun. And it looks awesome, and it's powerful.
Yeah, and it was, and I think a lot of it also was because I saw those things, the posters and the videos. I'm like, that looks cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to be a part of that in some way, form, or fashion. So
when you got into drumming and becoming a drummer on mm-hmm. your own terms, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Did you take lessons?
No.
Did you start or join any, like, garage bands or jam with friends, or was it kind of more of a personal thing?
It was a personal thing. You know, I think I might have been early 20s, 21, 22, 23, when I bought my first acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And just over the years, I just taught myself pretty much all that you could teach yourself unless
yeah.
you went to the next level.
If you get the Mel Bay book, that's really all you need.
Yeah. And so I learned to play guitar first, and it was probably mid to late 20s is when I got my first kit.
Huh.
But it was years. It was a good 6-7 years before I actually
right.
played with anybody. But
so you discovered it, you liked it, but you didn't really... I think I fell into the path of... Like, I was in third grade going, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be a musician. Like, I just knew. There was no alternative.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
That was the... tunnel vision for me.
Right.
But you actually were just, it was kind of a hobby.
Yeah.
But you had other things too.
Oh,
and we'll
yeah.
touch on all that. You're known for your skateboards
uh-huh.
and all that stuff. And you just totally ruined the podcast by kicking the table.
I kicked something.
Some big boom probably will happen. But so there was this giant span of just your growing up, your teenage years, your early 20s mm-hmm. of just being a music fan.
Yeah.
Tinkering with music instruments, but mm-hmm. not for the purpose yeah. of being like, I'm going to be the next
right.
rock star from
yeah.
this area or whatever.
Yeah. No, up until I started trying different instruments and wanting to play. No, I always love for music. Still very diverse. Like to listen to a lot of things. Like mm-hmm. to listen to new things.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of discover, find things for myself.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, so up until about my early 20s is when I decided, you know, I want to try this.
And what year was that? If I'm guessing, that would be around mid-90s, late 90s?
Yeah. So
you went
through mid-90s, 96.
The 80s, hair metal, glam yeah. rock, into uh-huh. the grunge movement.
Right.
Was obviously that had to have some sort of impact
mm-hmm.
of watching the tides change.
Yeah.
And I know you're into a lot of the stuff from the 90s, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What lit the fire for you to finally do something about it, to start a band, to get into a band, and when did that happen?
I think it was just getting old enough to start watching live music around here,
mm-hmm.
going to different places. Yeah, I think the first time I said to myself, I want to be in a band, I want to be a musician, whether I go somewhere with it, or it's local. And some of you guys still may remember this band, but it was Radioactive Flowers.
Oh, of course.
That I would go see them all the time.
great. So that means we were standing next to each other.
Probably,
and
yeah.
And never talked.
Yeah.
I saw that band, I would say, in a span of a couple years.
Uh-huh.
I probably saw Radioactive Flowers easily 20 times.
Yeah.
Easily. And I'm talking just Gary's and Baker Street. Uh-huh. Like, if I could just narrow it down to just Bowling Green shows.
Yeah.
Those two clubs alone. Mm-hmm. You know? I saw them on South Lawn one time.
I do know that all the places I've watched them at are no longer in existence.
Yeah, Gary's was kind of their main hot spot. And I know they played Baker Street. Mm-hmm. There was a couple clubs downtown, but I can never remember the name of them. They played in Fountain Square during one of those early year Concert in the Park series.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can relate to you on that.
And
Radioactive Flowers doesn't get brought up a lot.
They don't.
From people that I've interviewed.
And I hate that. I had one of their CDs, the very first CD. And at one point, I've got all my CDs stolen from my car, and that was one of them. And I've never been able to replace it. And I just, you know, if anyone out there hears this and they know where I can get one or they can give me one, I would really appreciate that. I need to hunt down
one of the band members. Yeah. Every band from that era has at least a few boxes of CDs unopened.
Sure.
They all do. Have you ever run into that?
Oh, all the time.
It cracks me up because they'll be like, I found this box of CDs. And
100 CDs,
under a toolbox in the garage. They've been sitting here for 15 years.
Yeah, but if anyone can get me one, I would.
Okay.
That'd be awesome.
Corey Link needs a Radioactive Flowers CD. Make it happen.
Make it happen, please.
But I can relate to you on that. They were a great band.
Yeah.
The highlight of it, I guess the peak of it, they had two drummers.
Uh-huh.
They had two female vocals. Mm-hmm. One played flute, the other played guitar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They had an amazing bass player, which I can't remember any of their names because it was a hazy time for me.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I feel you.
But they were a great band. And that lit the spark for you.
I think so, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do? And, before we jump too far into your lifetime or span of time, are we missing anything from that spell of teenage years and youth of just, you just literally tinkered on your own terms?
Well, my youth and teenage years, it's still loving music and liked my hard rock. I was really into a lot of other things as well, and getting in trouble a lot. So it's just,
you don't seem like the troublemaker to me.
No, maybe have a conversation with my dad.
We'll touch on this as we get closer to conversation towards the end. But you're known around town as a guy that builds really awesome skateboards.
Yeah,
have you been in the skate scene around here for a while? Is that part of growing up too, or is that later in life?
That's not part of growing up, and just on and off through my entire adulthood.
Linked into the music scene. Like, you didn't go skate night class and check the band out while they were playing. Did you do anything like that?
I didn't do that, but being a skater and being in the skate scene comes with its own class of music.
Yeah.
And so.
I can imagine a lot of the people you may have been hanging out with were turning you on to bands that none of us were ever hearing about. Not on MTV. Not like the bands that would be on those Thrasher things.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like you pointed out a video to me recently. I'm like, have you ever heard this band before? Yeah. And you loved them when you were younger. And it was like skate music.
And a lot of the music that I heard, I had no idea who they were, but it was really cool, and it was fast, and it had a lot of energy to it. And,
so I always thought that guys that were skateboarding people were reading Thrasher magazine or the BMX magazine.
Yeah.
And those magazines were tapped into that world.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys were catching on to these bands that a lot of us didn't hear about until after the punk movement of 94 came in. Like, those bands already existed in the late 80s, but we didn't hear about them until like 96.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what's cool about the skateboarding community is that it is an underground scene that they don't want to become like big label sellout things, and they protect it with all their might. It's like you have to know the secret code to get into the door kind of thing. So were you a part of that? Did you hear a lot of music, or did it just not register with you?
I was a part of it in the sense of, I guess from the outside as an observer, you know, it's just, I don't think there was really that much of a punk skate scene in ground music like that around here. It's
not
kind of a
here,
small town. Yeah.
But I would think that you all were catching on to bands from Southern California that none of us would have ever heard of.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you know what I'm talking about. Bad Religion, No Effects, like the skate music. Did that ever come to you, or did you just kind of see it and keep flipping?
You know, I may have seen some of it and listened to some of it. But I'll be honest, you know, my
just
whole
didn't grab you.
My whole skate years, I still listen to your
Metallica
hair.
Skateboarding guy.
I listened to Metallica while skating, and always Rat. You know, I was always still in the hair metal.
Yeah,
and you know, I listened to the other stuff and liked it. But
I remember
was
seeing
hair metal.
Pictures of Metallica, and they skated.
They did,
and they were into the Misfits, and so there was this heavy metal connection to the punk skating thing. Because of the Misfits, because of Motorhead. Like, those two bands were so cool that the heavy metal and the punk side agreed that that was cool, and therefore they could kind of...
And you had your Black Label Society, things like that, but...
Well, that was later.
Yeah.
You know, Black Flag, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm talking, like, 80s punk. Okay. Late 70s, early 80s punk. But you were skating in, like, mid-80s. Late 80s.
Late 80s, I think I really...
It was, like, more of the Faith No More... era, the Chili Pepper era, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it's literally 1,000 bands you can name.
No, I got my first skateboard in 87.
Suicidal Tendencies would be skate music.
Yeah, Anthrax was a big...
Oh, yeah. So the thrash stuff kind of fit in with that?
I guess that's
where the Metallica link
comes. Skating back then was more the thrash metal, just the real aggressive.
Around
kind of
here.
Stuff. Around here, anyway, yeah.
If you were in Southern California, it would have been a whole different ballgame.
Right, it would have been.
But that's pretty cool, though, I think. Because, again, I think you guys in that scene, because I grew up with John Treadway, who skated. And this is, again, around the same time of what you're talking
about. He comes out and skates with us every now and then.
He was tapped into this world that none of us in that high school had ever heard of these bands. And John was hearing about them from reading, I guess, Thrasher and maybe watching skate videos that's got circulated out through people. There were a few people at my high schools that were skateboarders. And they were cool enough to like point me in the right direction.
Yeah.
I discovered a lot of good bands because of those guys. And I'm very thankful for that. But I just wanted to see about that because I wasn't sure if that was something that was a part of your life or not.
Yeah. Now, if you ever have a podcast, you want to talk about that stuff directly.
We are right now,
but specifically that Jim Madison, because that was
him. Yeah, Jim's had his episode, but it was all music related, you know.
Right, but no, he was a big skater, and that
Jim was. And the reason I think I'm asking you all these questions is because you are friends with Jim.
Yeah,
and I knew Jim when I met Jim when I was like 14 or 15 years old. And the first time I met Jim Madison, it was a Halloween party, and we went to their apartment to hang out before we went to the party.
Yeah,
and Jim was dressed up as Henry Rollins.
Oh yeah,
and he
talks about that.
He was drawing the tattoos on his arms and legs with ink markers.
Yeah,
which looked incredibly accurate. And at the time, Jim looked incredibly accurate to Henry Rollins.
Right.
When he was,
he did.
You got to think, this was probably in 91, like 1990, 1991.
Yeah, and he told me he specifically hardly ever wore a shirt because he was in such good shape.
Yeah.
Like Henry Rollins.
He was a bad dude.
He was.
And that was the first time I ever met Jim Madison.
Okay.
And I've known Jim ever since. Yeah. But you and Jim know each other very well. You're very good friends, very close.
Yeah, we've been really good friends for, I don't know.
And I mean,
4 or 5 years now.
Jim is one of those people that I think about when I think about skateboarding. Of course, he's a dominant factor of our town's skateboarding
scene. Oh, absolutely.
And he was the guy that was hardcore Misfit fan, Black Flag, and all the stuff I could list. I mean, Jim was a fan. And Jim is just a jukebox Like, he That's loves a good description. Music. He loves music.
He could rattle off 100 bands right now that I've never heard of.
Exactly. He really, I think, has tapped into the underground scene better than anything.
I think probably better than most people here in town he is.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to magazines of that nature, things that were very underground and kept close, kind of secret things, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was part of that. But I just feel like the skateboarding scene in this town exists, but it's very hush-hush. It's very low-key. It's obviously, it's not something that you boast about. It's not something you, it's not like a biker gang.
Right.
You just go out and skate and have a good time. You don't, it's not about an image. It's not about.
It's changed a lot since the 80s. I'm sure it definitely has, but
I can't skate worth a shit. I don't skateboard at all. I can get on it and let it roll, and that's about all I can do. Okay. I was more in the BMX stuff, but not like tricks, just riding.
Just the bike itself.
Just the bike and riding, but I always had a cool bike.
Right.
So I was into that, but I'm not a roller blade, like wheel person. I don't like wheels on my feet. That's weird.
It's dangerous.
It's very dangerous. But anyway, I just wanted to touch on that to see if there was anything in there.
Yeah, skateboarding, I don't think it would exist without music.
They definitely go hand in hand.
Punk, thrash, or that underground.
And they make excellent videos.
They do.
And we have talked about this.
I can't wait.
When El Astronauta makes a record, we want to make a music video with skateboard like scenes. I want to make a video at the skate park.
I'm not going to mention any song titles, but I already have one in mind that I think would work perfect with the skate video.
Does it start with an S?
Ooh.
Is it the jazzy song?
No.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, all of our songs would go good in a skate video.
I might throw it out there. Be Mine. I think that would be a good
one. Be Mine is a great song for a skate video. Mm-hmm. But it's like you could ride a skateboard up to this hot girl and be like, hey, be mine.
Right. Find a good old skate hag or something.
And people are like, come on, get on with the story here. Anyway, so enough about that. We will touch on that later.
Sure.
Because that is worthy of mentioning about you. So you're around that era of the 90s, and you discover Radioactive Flowers. Who else did you happen to catch maybe back then that was playing out? Did anybody else stand out to you or... anything else in the local music scene?
Honestly speaking, and there's probably several that can relate to this. I mean, you kind of said you could too. But no, I saw lots of bands back there. But honestly, that 5-6 years in that 90s, it's really hazy for me. I hate saying it.
We've all had moments.
Yeah.
I can recall a lot, but I can also...
I can recall seeing a lot of bands.
People come up to me and go, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, I have no idea who you are.
I was out with a lot of friends and seeing a lot of bands, but I just don't recall any names.
I can't recall any names. But you probably saw some good stuff.
Oh yeah.
What places did you go to?
Because
I can easily name off the clubs that existed in that time frame.
I mean it was the Kelly Greens or what was it?
Vicks,
Baker Boys, or it's all those places. I can't remember the names.
Baker Street became Baker Boys. Baker Street was 13th Street.
Cafe, it's Hilligan's now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was Baker Street for a long time.
Yeah, and it was really, really small.
And a lot of good bands played there in that heyday. But yeah, Vicks and Brewing Company, Kelly Greens, these things have been brought up in so many episodes at this point. But back then, we had Gary's, we had State Street Pub, Night Class was still a hopping place on campus.
I do remember that.
There were a lot of good shows on South Campus, or how would I say that? God, I'm so sorry, people. I say South Campus all the time, and they're like, are you talking about, you know, like actually South Campus on Nashville Road? No, South Lawn.
South Lawn,
over by Duck is what I'm talking about. There were a lot of shows that were held outside under tents on South Lawn for various things like Earth Day. And now they have Revolution Radio has RevFest on.
RevFest.
Yeah, they'll have those downtown or put on there. Western's always been good about concerts. But back in the 90s, they had some damn good concerts. And I was thinking about this the other day. I saw the Dead Milkmen at Garrett Ballroom. And it was on that tour of Punk Rock Girl, that album, Beelzebubba. Were you a fan of the Dead Milkmen at all?
No, I don't.
They had a song that was like, "You and Me, Punk Rock Girl." You've heard it.
Okay,
it
was like a big hit.
They were like a one-hit underground wonder.
Yeah, I don't think I knew their name, but I do know that
song.
Yeah,
they were like a quirky, weird band of the early 90s or mid-90s, but they played at Western. Hmm. And every time there would be like a big band play at Western, a mm-hmm. local would open. Mm-hmm. So I saw a lot of good shows with local openers. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know if you had or not. Nothing rings a bell?
Nope, nothing rings a
bell.
Very
foggy?
Still very foggy.
So we're going to go back to the Radioactive Flowers.
Okay.
Because that stands out to you. When you saw that and you said like 30 minutes ago that lit a spark for you.
Uh-huh.
So what was your first attempt of getting into a band and how did it all start?
Well, I mean, I guess you could say there were a lot of unsuccessful attempts. The problem that I would always run into is this, you know, I didn't personally know or have friends that wanted to do that. And so it was hard for me to find people that I could play with that weren't already playing.
It's a shame we didn't meet 30 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I know it.
You're like an enigma.
And
is that the right word? You were invisible.
Yes. Yes, I think so. But I had a hard time, you know, and so I just continued just to.
So you just like jammed with people?
I did.
But nothing ever evolved of it.
Yeah. Yeah. One person that I, when I first got my first drum kit, a friend of mine, his name's Mark Story. He lives up in New Jersey right now.
He
played guitar, and we'd jam all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we would record, you know, on a cassette. You know, just stuff.
That's what we had.
Yeah. And and that's what really, I'm like, I don't know how. One of these days, I'm going to keep pushing and fighting until I find people that
so that's how you really got
yeah,
your main yeah, main start, like yeah, cutting your teeth with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but my first person that I really made legit music with.
So did you guys form a band or just jam?
Just jammed.
No gigs, no uh-huh, band name, yeah. No nothing.
And then eventually a friend of mine, Dax Evans, mm-hmm. who I was in a band with,
Evans Link,
yes, he would jam with us, and so we'd have a little three piece, and we would do chorus stuff, and I've still got a tape somewhere that I can listen to some of that really early stuff of that we created.
Got to put it out there.
Yeah, I should let you listen to it sometime. But yeah, we just jam and nothing would come to it.
So when did you get into your first band? Like your legit band with a name and started playing shows?
2005, 2006.
Man, that was...
Yeah, I mean, I had to suffer a long time, you know, with the desire.
Was it suffering or just being
it was,
patient?
It was being patient but suffering because, you know, it's I knew I want to get out there and do that.
Right.
I just can't find the right people.
I get that. What did you do? I mean, just work jobs and live life? I mean, you didn't really have, like, goals to be a lawyer or...
No.
Any kind of, like, entrepreneur or anything?
I mean, I was a... Yeah, I worked in... optics, you know, lens crafters and optician.
Again, you probably made my glasses.
Maybe.
I swear to God, we have...
Yeah, but I was an optician for 16 years.
We have walked past
years.
Each other and yeah. stood next to each other for so many years and never even knew it. We had to.
Yeah, but I did that for a long time, so...
So, music was there.
Always there.
And it was a passion for you.
Always.
But you just didn't really have the right people or
right.
the right, like... links
that's
to make connections yeah, to stuff.
Yeah, I have learned, you know, especially here in town, that, you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
It's who you know. And I didn't know the
it
right
really
people
is.
To really
and
get
if you know
into
the wrong
it,
people.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
You're screaming.
You know all about that, don't you?
I have my moment.
So yeah, 2006 Dax Evans, we went to high school together.
Dax Evans
yeah.
is the coolest name I've ever heard.
It is. I mean, it's...
Although Corey Link's a cool last name, but Dax Evans,
yeah,
that's a comic book hero.
I mean, I feel like you can put that
name
on a lot of
different things. He can kill aliens with his bare hands.
Right. But yeah, no, he was a good singer songwriter, and he's still doing stuff today. But you know, I don't know how I talked him into it, because I know that the band thing really wasn't his thing, but right. But it was something new for him as well, and so we kind of formed a band with another bass player around here who plays with Disorderly Conduct, Tim Wilson.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it was me, Tim, and Dax, and we had a little trio and called.
Tim is good.
He is good.
I saw them last summer at the concert in the park.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a standard cover band. Typical songs that you would expect. Right. But they actually are entertaining.
They are.
And they really put on a good show, and they're just having fun. It wasn't like, we're the best band in town kind of crap. They're literally having a good time.
Yeah.
Tim is a good dude.
Yeah.
That was cool. That's cool. I mean, I would think working alongside him would have been something to really push you in the learning field of being a rhythm section.
Yeah.
You know, drumming. And like, yeah, because I would think a solid bass player like him would be a good one.
Yeah. No, so Dax, Evans Link, you know, being my first legit band, you know, he's my first real bass player that I played with.
Right.
I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did that go?
That lasted almost exactly a year.
Oh.
And then Dax, he just got really busy with going back and forth to Nashville, doing all these, you know, these solo singer-songwriter festivals and things where, you know, they go somewhere and you play one song and you try to get it out there. And so it just got to be too much for him to do that 3 or 4 times a week and then try to practice and try to do a gig. So it just kind of fizzled out.
It is hard, I think, to juggle being a band and a solo artist.
Yeah. And so... Tim and I, he knew he had someone that he was going to bring in a guitar player, and we were going to try to start something. We had a few songs and practiced a couple times, but then the guitar player knew another drummer that had all the equipment, the PA, everything, and I think he was another.
So he's automatically in the band.
Right. And so they ended up starting the band Blue Light Special.
They were using
it. Yeah. Blue Light Special, if you heard
that. I recall Blue Light Special, which is kind of connected to the Disorderly Conduct thing.
So, and another situation there of who you know. So,
you got pushed out.
I got pushed out, and so...
You son of a bitch.
I know. It.
How dare you?
I didn't know all the right people at the time, so, you know.
Why didn't we meet?
I know it. So, I went...
This makes me angry.
Yeah, another spell. But before that, you know, I don't even remember how I got introduced to the people or the gentleman that started the band Pig Blues.
Pig Blues.
Yeah, out of Pig, Kentucky.
Right.
Just right up the road.
It's kind of on the border of Warren and Edmondson County.
Yeah.
Where I grew up near Warren East, if I went right out of my driveway and went up the road and went straight through the first stop sign I came to, I was in Pig, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like, it was that close to where I live.
Yeah.
And there's a great restaurant. Rye Davis is from there.
Yeah.
And I had this great conversation with him. I was like, there's a restaurant there, and I've eaten there like 3 times, and it's great. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's still there. Like, really? I need to go back. It's been like a decade since I ate there.
But that right there, that was really short-lived. We, you know, we did a couple shows. I think we did a festival, and then we played on South Lawn at some Western...
Not South Campus.
Right, on South Lawn. Western was having
something. Well, who was in the Pig Blues? Which is a great name. Not only referencing a local area community, but it's actually a good name.
Yeah, and honestly, I can't even remember the names. It didn't last very long at all. And I don't even remember how I got introduced to some of these guys.
It's okay.
But, you know, they were
heavy
all...
Heavy drinking and drugs and pills will do that to you.
But they were all in their, you know, late 40s, 50s at the time.
Oh, they were older than you.
Yeah, and I was just in my mid-20s, you know, late 20s.
I had some weird moments like that, too, as a drummer. I would, like, man, our band really needs a drummer. And I would show up to audition, and everybody was, like, 55. And I was 24. Yeah. And then,
and I think that was the case.
I'm like,
I got
you all
the
like
gig,
Pearl Jam? Yeah.
I think that was the case. You know, they needed
a
drummer.
We like Garth Brooks and George Strait. I like Pearl Jam.
Right.
It was weird.
But it was fun. It was a learning experience.
And it was just a solid blues band, or like what you would typically expect around here of a they say blues, but right. then they end up playing like pop and ZZ Top.
No, we didn't. Maybe some ZZ Top like songs, but, see, well, they but say early ZZ Top.
They say Stevie Ray Vaughan. And yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that those guys were influenced by the blues. That's not blues.
Yes.
They were influenced by blues.
Yeah, that's a difference.
It's huge difference.
Yeah.
I can't stand that, but I get it.
But so, yeah, but
who cares?
But the group of songs we had, they were pretty bluesy, pretty country.
Yeah. Do you recall anything, like, artist-wise? Like, who did you cover?
No, we didn't cover anyone. I think they were.
Oh, it was all original.
Yeah, they were all doing their own stuff.
Pretty
so,
cool.
Yeah,
and can't argue with that.
Yeah, and I don't even have any recordings of any of it. So,
Meh. That's a shame.
Yeah. So,
but again, it was like these two things helped put you on this path,
right?
And you've been on it ever since,
right? And I knew after those first two gigs like that, I want to continue on the path until right. I find something, and it has to do with patience.
So what was the next thing? It was a 90s cover band, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, actually, it was
the Pet Detectives.
Pet Detectives, but you know, in between all this time, I still play drums at church. You know, there's a church band, and so,
what church?
Broadway United.
Oh, off of Small House Road, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, it's back in there.
It's off of Circle Drive.
And yeah.
Was it Lehman Avenue? What is that name?
Yeah, it's over there kind of by Bowling Green High.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's back there.
If you're a local, you know where it is.
Right, yeah. It's
so
literally.
You play drums in the church band there.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so, hey, I'm whether I was in a band or not, I was always trying to find a way to keep playing with people. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do.
I was always looking for the next thing.
Yep. So you did that, and then somehow ended up in this band.
And that's how I got...
The band came from playing at Broadway.
Well...
kind of, sort of.
One of the guys that I played with, he was the keyboardist. And because we're on air, and it's all coming right now, I can't think of his name. Curtis.
Very good. Most people totally don't get Curtis, anything.
His name is Curtis Willis. And
good.
I went to high school with him. He was a year older than me. But he played keyboards, and he was in a band called Collective Underground. And I hadn't heard of him.
Doesn't ring a bell.
And I don't think they...
It was so underground.
Yeah, it was so underground.
We have not heard of it.
But he asked me... to come sit in at a practice of theirs. They had a drummer, and he wasn't saying anything at the time, and he didn't tell me at the time, but he knew that their drummer wasn't going to last very long.
Mm.
So he got me in. The way he put it to me afterwards was he wanted to get me in, learn the music, and he knew when that drummer stepped down, I would be able to take over.
But it was kind of being prepped.
Yeah. So what they did was they brought me in to do, you know, just whatever needed, a backup vocal or play rhythm guitar.
Interesting.
And learn the music, because they didn't want to say, oh, we're going to use him because we know that at some point you're going to leave. So they didn't want to make it awkward.
Right.
Like the other drummer knew that I was going to take his place. Yeah. So it was kind of hush hush, but he did eventually step down, and I got the role. And after that, we changed the name to Fort Balter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the same band.
It was different name,
okay.
And they kind of started over. They had a couple songs they still kept, but then we wrote 13, 14 other different songs. So
while it was the Pet Detectives, right?
No, that's,
or this is a totally different band.
Pet Detective is a totally different band.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking there was a connection there.
No, there is no connection there. No connection.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. So, the Fort Balter, we did that for a little over a year.
And you made a record.
We've made a record,
yeah.
And we've still, right now, currently...
it's really good, because I have it.
Uh-huh.
And, but unfortunately, the band... came to an end pretty quick after it was.
As soon as we really started to catch on here in Bowling Green, our lead singer, Paul Bradley, always a dream of his to go to New York and try to pursue a career in Broadway type material, yeah, whether it be singing or acting. So, you know, he's like, I'm going
to
do it.
Anybody that has the guts to pack a bag and move for that has got.
And I think anyone that could do it would be him, because his voice was phenomenal. Right. I mean, he's what, honestly, we were all just people playing instruments, but he made that band. He really did with his voice.
It's a good album.
Yeah.
And when you guys got going, like you said.
And you can still get that album at Mellow Mats, I believe.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you can.
I saw a nice little ad for it there.
Uh-huh.
Whoever put that up, I was like, hey, that's cool.
And you
it's a really good record, and obviously you played drums on it.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did the band last? Like, not long.
I want to say a year, maybe 13 months, something like that.
That's almost a year.
Yeah.
You did play around town, though.
We did.
I know for a fact that you played at 643 and Tidballs.
We played at 643 several times, and we played Tidballs a lot.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know if it was the type of music that you typically hear at Tidballs, but honestly, we brought a crowd, so they were always coming back.
Tidballs is good at diversity.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
And at the time that we were playing there, they were getting a lot of other bands in from Nashville that did the same type. You know, we were like a jazz funk kind of.
Right. It was very, I would say, not really alternative.
No.
But it does kind of fall into that category if you look at it from a certain angle.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, it's really, really good. But it's also night and day different from what you're playing now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. Yeah.
Again, it was like just a cool band.
Right.
And you were playing drums.
It was a cool band.
And you're very proud of that, and I don't blame you.
I am. You know, it's
it sucks.
I think any musician is going to be.
If they get back together, you're going to quit our band.
No, I'm pretty sure we're not going to get.
I'm already prepared for this.
But
all drummers quit on me.
No, I don't think we'll ever get back together as a band. But there may be a few times because we've done it once. You know, it just so happens everyone's back here at once.
I mean,
we'll go play a show somewhere.
Absolutely, if it can be done, do it.
Yeah.
So for Balter, great name. What does it mean?
Well,
because I think it's misleading. Maybe.
Yeah. We spent a couple weeks trying to come up with a new name to say, you know, we're a new band now. When we found that name, we had gotten to the point where let's just look through a thesaurus.
Ah.
And Molly Pinson, who was a female vocalist, and she played some bass. She was looking through the thesaurus, and she was just looking for words that sounded cool. And she saw the word Balter.
Yeah.
And then she read what it means and was like, that's kind of cool.
What does it mean?
Well, Balter is to move or dance without any particular kind of rhythm or style or grace, but just to kind of gyrate, you know, in the moment of being.
So that would be like Elaine from Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Throwing those thumbs out.
She balters.
She balters, yeah. But it's to move, you know, not. It's basically dancing without knowing how to dance.
That's the highlight of my day, just now saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what a great comparison.
Yeah. So. But if you want to see the exact definition, you know, look it up in an Urban Dictionary.
The Urban Dictionary.
It will be in an Urban Dictionary.
Yeah. While you're there, look up Dean.
Dean.
Dean in the Urban Dictionary is like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
And actually, I still do have it's a demo CD, but a demo from Evans Link.
Oh.
And so maybe I should let you listen to that sometime.
I need to hear all this stuff.
Yeah, I'll let you
I'm a big connoisseur of old local music.
Yeah.
I have quite a bit.
And so once that was over with,
where did where did that come from?
You know, it's just,
is that like saying we're four?
Yes.
Gyrating and dancing funny?
It's, yes. Well, we first got together talking about it and how were we going to.
Starting a revolution on odd dance
moves? Right. It was like. I was like, hey, look, I'll design a poster for us to kind of give us a look, and you know, we wanted to make it like a campaign, and so you have it's like we are four Balter, you know, like you're for something, you know.
I and get so, it now,
and so that's
you were about to tell me, and I was like, no, don't tell me until we're taping.
Right,
we got to get that recorded. But like you said, that band lasted very quickly.
Yeah. Like all the bands I've ever been in. They haven't lasted, you know, more than a year or just very short of a year.
Don't you totally just jinxed our band.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Take it back.
No. Okay, yeah, I'm just kidding. Psych.
We're going to have at least a 10-year career, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. So who was in For Balter?
We had Curtis Willis. He was our keyboards. And then we had Mike Meese, who played guitar. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent musician. He mm-hmm. really can play anything guitar-wise. Almost, he's very knowledgeable in like chords and jazz chords and all those weird chords.
Very skilled.
Very skilled.
And the music kind of resembles that. It was very...
and that was
his avant-garde would be the right word. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things in there. Like
and that was his take on it. He wanted to do something, you know, where you would hear a melody or a tune, and just in your mind, you think, oh, I know where that's going to go.
Right.
And then, so he wanted to do something and take it in a different direction.
Right.
Where you wouldn't think it would go.
Which is what jazz is known for. So there's elements of all these different things and sprinkled in there.
Yeah, so a lot of the music sound, it really comes from him.
Cool.
And we kind of followed him. And then you had Molly Pinson, who was a female vocalist. And she was learning to play bass. So she played bass on several things. Hmm. And if we didn't use a actual bass guitar, Curtis would play the bass notes on his keyboard.
Right. Common thing for mm-hmm. bands with a keyboard player.
And then we had, of course, me on drums. Paul Bradley.
You? Yeah. Corey Link on drums.
Paul Bradley. He was a... He was the heart of it. He came up with all the lyrics. Okay. I mean, he had... That first album is pretty much all his memoirs.
Oh.
It is... That album is personal to him because it tells his story. You know, it's tough growing up and being a gay man. And it was extra tough because you're growing up being a black gay man. And so he had pretty rough... From what I gather, and mm-hmm. we never really sat down and talked about it, but you know, he had a lot of struggles.
You can always imagine.
Yeah, he had a lot of struggles, I guess, growing up, and so that first album was just him writing his story out and singing about it. So if you kind of listen to the album and then really listen to the vocals and the words to it, you can hear.
I'll have to listen to it again now because that did not register with me.
Yeah, so to me it was.
I just heard beautiful music with cool words.
Yeah, so it's.
Like it's personal.
It's a pretty powerful album if you really sit down and break it apart.
Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Yeah, and then last, Ashley Harden, another skilled musician. She was a music major at Western.
Really?
And so she played our horns and things like that. So she played the sax, and I think she could also play the tenor sax.
Hmm.
And then she played clarinet on something. But not very much. You may have just played the sax.
That's a heck of a utility musician to have mm-hmm. in a band.
Right.
But yeah, you guys, the record speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, lyrically, I never really pay attention to lyrics.
I don't either. Really,
but I will now that you've told me that. But musically speaking, it's a great record.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first met and started hanging out, you brought it to me just to kind of let me hear your drumming.
Right.
Because you were like... Dean's never really heard me play drums before. He's just been told I'm a drummer.
Right.
Here's an album of me playing drums. Uh-huh. And then I found some video, I think, on YouTube of you guys and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, he can play.
Mm-hmm.
But we met around this time, finally. And it was kind of on an interesting thing because Seth had joined my band.
Mm-hmm.
And was playing guitar in my band. And we were struggling to keep a drummer. Go figure. And he knew of you. Because Seth is in Peter the Freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in the Pet Detectives. And both of these bands were 90s mm-hmm. cover bands.
Right.
So where does the Pet Detectives fit into your timeline? Was it around that time frame?
It was almost right... Exactly after we were done with For Balter.
Okay.
And
that was around the time that we were in a band together. Or somewhere around that time. Like
you and Seth?
Yeah, because I remember him telling me that he had talked to you. Uh-huh. And that band was like on the verge of ending.
Right. And
that comes to mind.
Right. But Pet Detective started pretty much right after For Balter.
Right.
And
it was just a 90s cover
band. It was 90s, and it lasted maybe a year. Most of that year was just getting songs together and practicing them. We had a few gigs, but most of the members in the band, they've never been in a real performing band before. I was the only one that had any kind of experience.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. And but they all of them,
the test dummy.
Yeah, all of them are church musicians. I played with every single one of them at church.
So they had the skill. They just hadn't done the
right. Yeah.
The bar circuit.
So basically, this was the church band that I played with, and they were like, "Let's do something different."
So what were you playing? And you're like, when I hear '90s cover band, mm-hmm. I immediately think of the '90s hits.
Yeah.
But in the rock and pop format.
Yeah.
But a lot of '90s cover bands do country and the crossover country stuff.
Maybe we did do one or two.
But like when you say 90s cover, what do you think of?
We did a lot of the rock and a lot of the pop.
So like the Seattle movement, we did the 94 punk kind of movement, Weezer, stuff like that.
We did some Weezer and Alice in Chains, Stone Temple Pilots.
Right. And again, this is what I was getting at.
Right, yeah.
Because there's that movement in the late 90s mm-hmm. where there were a lot of one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
And a lot of bands do that
stuff. And we did some of that. You know, we did,
Go ahead and say it. Say Cumbersome.
Say what?
Now, everybody does that song.
Oh, I don't think we did that one.
Good for you.
We didn't do that.
Good.
You know, we did some Hootie and the Blowfish. We did Counting Crows. We did some Wallflowers.
I like the Wallflowers. Yeah. I saw the Wallflowers in concert. They were a really good band.
Uh-huh. Who else did we do? It wasn't exactly a 90s. Well, maybe it was, but some Tom Petty.
Yeah, I mean, Tom had some good stuff in the 90s.
And then a lot of your other poppy stuff. Like, I wasn't even big fans of theirs during the 90s.
Right.
I know their music.
Just dominated the radio.
Right, but I can't remember the names. But like, I can't even think of
it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But but overall, as a 90s cover band, when you use that term, you literally covered the ground.
Yeah.
Of all of that.
Yeah.
And you, again, that band was very short-lived.
Very short-lived. I think it was just different views on what everyone wanted from the band.
Very typical.
Yeah. Everyone else but me, it was more of just something to do, you know, for fun.
Right.
You know, we did a couple shows, and no one really wanted to play out at your typical Tidballs or any place late. You know, they tried to get a festival or a
Fuddy Duddies
or a fundraiser type thing. You know, something from 7 to 9 or so.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean that's awesome. But
I'm still Mr. Cool hanging out at midnight.
Yeah. So I mean, it wasn't really.
I'll turn into a pumpkin.
Yeah. And everyone just wanted to have fun, and it was fun for a while, but.
Well, all girls just want to have fun.
All girls just want to have fun.
Well, this is how we kind of met, because
at the end of this is when
Seth was Peter the Freshman had been a band for, which obviously we already know the story of Chest Rockwell and Peter the Freshman. Peter the Freshman is Chest Rockwell, but they started the Peter the Freshman thing just a few years ago because they were like, we can do 90s covers and get booked in the venues that normally wouldn't book us as an original band.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they started doing that. Well, Seth knew of you, or somehow knew you, because you were the only two 90s cover bands
mm-hmm.
in town.
Right.
And that is how I believe that you were brought to my attention, is because Seth Wilson knew of you.
And I think.
And you posted something on Facebook about looking for a band.
I did do that, but I think before that, he kind of knew of me because my wife and his wife boot camped together.
Right.
And so my wife, knowing that her friend's husband was in Peter the Freshman, which we both really liked that band.
Yeah.
I think she had mentioned to her that, oh, yeah, my husband plays drums, and he's in
the
90s
band. So a combination of both of those things.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of both of those, yeah.
Well, we were struggling with getting our new band going, and I had gotten in touch with you. Like, I just friended you on Facebook because basically Seth was like, do you know this guy?
Yeah.
He's looking for a band. And I was like, I've no clue who this guy is, but yet he's friends with all these people I'm friends with.
Right.
Especially the Jim Madison connection. Mm-hmm. I was like, Jim Madison knew I was in a band and I was looking for a drummer.
You know,
and
I've meant to mention that to him a couple times and I've forgotten.
I think a lot of people just never thought of it.
Yeah.
You know, if they knew you and knew me.
Yeah.
But regardless, our paths eventually crossed.
They did.
And I messaged you one day, and it's like, what are you looking for? And you were like, I'm just looking to play.
Yeah.
And I was at the time, like, kind of like on the fence of, am I going to keep doing the Captain Dean band, or am I still going to play bass and write songs, or am I going to go back to playing drums?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do. But I was kind of like, as a fellow drummer, as a fellow musician, I reached out to you and was like, hey, this band's looking for a drummer. You should go audition. Yeah. And we ended up auditioning for, like, the same band.
Yeah.
And then you auditioned for one band that I almost auditioned for.
Mm-hmm.
But none of it worked out for you, and none of it worked out for me.
Right.
I decided that I was not ready to go back to playing drums full time because I'm a little burned out on it. I love it, but I'm burned out on it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy playing bass and singing. So I told Seth, I was like, I want to stay on bass and keep writing songs, but I'm not going to scream and we can go other direction.
Mm-hmm.
We can start from scratch. So I knew Ian Harper, and Ian and I had become pretty close over the years and musically hanging out and stuff. And so we gave him a shot at playing drums in this new band.
Right.
Or at least just testing waters, you know. Well, we had a few jams, and it was great, but unfortunately, there's a 20-year age difference between us.
Yeah.
He was still in school. He's young. He's single. Yeah. And I'm like, man, this ain't going to work out. So, of course, the next option was you.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it like that, and I know you know.
Last option, right.
I'm not meaning that in a bad way, but you know what I'm getting at.
Right.
Because Ian had come in and played with Seth and I at one point as like a fill-in thing, like a last-minute kind of thing. I got a Captain Dean show offer, and I was like, Ian, can you learn 10 songs in a week and play this gig? And he was like, sure. And that kind of was what sparked the idea to me and Seth that maybe we should keep going and try something new. And Ian being like a blues drummer, we thought that would be a great idea. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. But fortunately, you, my friend, were the next in line and got the phone call. So in a way, we were kind of auditioning. We never nailed it down.
Right.
We never said, we're going to start a new band and this is it. You know, it's like Seth and I just wanted to get something going, but we weren't rushing it or pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
You come over on the fly. Like, it was literally a phone
December
call.
December 12th.
That day.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, you want to jam? And you were like, yes.
Hell yeah.
And so you came up and we jammed. And we didn't have much. We had a few riff ideas.
Right.
And showed you the things that we had. And just kind of goofed around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quick. And it happened. And then here comes the holidays.
Right.
And I'm torn between this thing is I still wasn't sure if Ian wanted to do anything or not.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out he kind of didn't. And you and I kept talking through the holiday season about music and stuff. So put it all together. We get back together after the holidays in January of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately started writing songs, like, right on the spot.
Yeah, it was.
It happened fast.
Uh-huh. No, after that first, I guess it could be jam session or audition,
session,
whatever it was.
I mean, technically, it was an audition because we didn't really know you.
Right.
We didn't know if you could play.
Right.
Like, it was one of those deals. I've had people go, hey, man, I'm a drummer. I'm good.
I don't have
a kid. Okay, great. Look, come over at 5 o'clock on Sunday and we'll jam. And they didn't own a drum set and they couldn't play drums. They thought they could, but they couldn't. I've been in that situation a lot.
It's amazing how, you know, people say, it's a drum. So hard can it be? Oh, yeah, I play drums. Yeah, I can play.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, I always tell people, it's like running on a treadmill while sitting down.
Yeah.
Chewing gum and talking on
the phone. You got four limbs and eating doing hamburger. Four different things at four different timings. And so it's tough.
It's not easy. It's not easy. I mean, I think some people can play drums and make noise, and some people can play drums and make sense of it.
Right.
And so in a polite way of saying it, you did get auditioned. Yeah. Yeah. But you know that. Yeah.
But what I was getting to, you know, after that first one, I mean, as we were
leaving.
We were leaving, and you really kind of came out and started talking to me about
stuff.
Yeah, you're...
Are you serious or not?
Yeah, you're really trying to feel me out and see, how serious are you? Yeah. I mean, is this, you know... And you let me know... Yeah, you let me know where you wanted to go and what you had in mind and this and that, and, you know...
But it wasn't me. It was us. Yeah. I have to clarify this because, I was like, this isn't my band. It's a band.
Right.
And I'm a member of it.
And you wanted to see, you kind of wanted to see how serious I am.
I think in a nutshell...
And what my goals were.
If I wanted to, I would have basically... I probably could have asked you to join Captain Dean.
Uh-huh.
And you probably would have done it.
I would have.
But we would have still started from scratch. But I'd already had a final show. I'd already killed that name.
Yeah.
It's a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck with it.
Yeah.
But it was a band name. And at that point, I was like, I've had too much trouble with it. I'd rather start from scratch and not play anything off of those 8 CDs and just start from scratch. I've never done that before. Or I have, but it's been years. And I've never done it as a lead vocalist and bass player. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this was an opportunity to go into different directions musically, sound, and lyrically speaking. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've done.
Yeah.
And you and I and Seth have built a really cool band.
That I think so.
Started very quickly, but yet was also patient. We were patient about picking a name.
Mm-hmm.
We were patient about working on riffs and ideas and, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But we basically nailed down in January, this is the band.
Yeah.
We're done. You're in the band.
Right.
And I would say, was it March that we decided on the name?
Yeah, it was a couple months.
Because I was very clear about that. I was like, let's just not pick some random name that we have to change later.
Right.
Let's just have no name and not worry about it. We'll just write songs and focus on the music. And then when the time comes that we have enough songs to play live, we'll come up with a name
that fits the music.
And we'll immediately start the campaign and do whatever we have to do. So I think by March of 2019, we had named the band El Astronauta.
Thank you, Seth.
Seth agreed to it.
I thought he was the one that came up with the name.
No, I came up with the name.
Oh, okay. This whole time
I didn't come up with the name. The name is a carving in Peru.
Right, but I thought he's the one that found it.
No, I found it years ago.
Okay.
It was...
Did you find it because you were
it
always...
was actually, it was a song title of mine.
Oh.
There's an intro to a song of one of my songs called Sky Gods, and there's an intro piece, an instrumental bass thing called El Astronauta.
Yeah.
And so I'd use that name just as an intro to that song because I loved it. And the song represents the whole Ancient Aliens TV show, the whole thing. I was all bent out of shape about UFOs at the time.
Yeah, see,
I'm a big UFO person.
Yeah, I would have figured that you found El Astronauta scrolling through all your crop circle videos that you watch.
It's there. And the thing is, again, if anyone doesn't know, El Astronauta is one of the many carvings in Nazca.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nazca lines also has carvings in the earth surface of animals. There's a spider, a monkey, I think a whale. There's all kinds of thousands of things, and they're there's ancient. I mean, these things have been there for hundreds of years. And you can't see them unless you're, like, up in the air.
30,000
feet,
like,
hot air balloon up in the air. And they're amazing. And there is a carving in the desert of Peru, in Nazca, that looks like an alien, or a man in a spacesuit.
A spaceman, yeah.
And they call, and the people of Peru call it El Astronauta, for it's the astronaut.
The astronaut, right.
And so I used that title a long time ago for a song intro, and it was just always there. And so when we were going back and forth with name titles, this was one of the name titles I just threw into the hat. Mm-hmm. Just to throw it in there, because at this point we were grabbing straws.
We'll just think of anything.
Can you remember any of the names we tossed away? Because I can't.
I can't, but...
There were some winners.
I vaguely remember, you know, you put out a post, you know, help us name our band.
And I did.
And some of the things that people were saying was just so ludicrous. Yeah. It was just ridiculous.
The Grape Soda Band. It's like, it's not just my band. What in the world?
I think some of those people are just coming up with words and writing them down.
There's always going to be the typical stuff, you know. Yeah,
the silly name. But
the Big Boy Band. Big. Ah, stupidity.
Three dudes with glasses.
But we landed on the name El Astronauta. Yeah. And then once we got the name, I don't know if this was true in your case as it was with me. It was like that Spark was like, oh yes, we've got a name, we're a band, and we've got all these songs. Like, we immediately kind of started, like, practicing a lot, and getting excited, and then we had the t-shirts, and then we had a show. We played our first show at Rib Liquors. All of this just recently happened from when we were
recording couple months
this. But we've had an amazing amount of stuff happen in a very
quickly,
short amount of time. So out of your music history has brought you to this this moment in time.
Right here.
And it's a brand new thing. It's only a few months old. What is, it's hard to interview a bandmate, but what's your take on this new band, and what do you see in the future?
Yeah. Well, honestly, I mean, I am really
asking that to someone else.
I'm really excited about it because, like you said, it's moved so quickly, and we've come so far in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
That is very new to me, because all the other bands that I've been in, it took a long time to get to where we were. And
I
about that time,
you were not used to that,
and then they dispersed. And so
I'd be like, I got a gig. I got a date. I mean, and you're like, what, now? Like, really?
Yeah. It's just amazing. You know, you get all these, but it's who you know. Everyone knows who Dean is. Captain Dean. Everyone knows Captain Dean. Captain Dean knows everybody. You know,
famous.
So it does help. But
it helps, but I mean, it's just me doing my thing. Yeah, I don't really know how else to put it.
Yeah, but for me personally, it was a little, I wouldn't say overwhelming, but just something very new for me
to
progress that quickly and to be to where we are right now.
It's the same thing to me. Like, it's just new people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've been with Seth now for about 2 years, off and on, throughout this time frame. Where do you stand with this new band and the songs we've written? And
oh, I'm excited as hell. I like all the songs. You know, of course, with any group of songs, you're right. You like some better than the others.
Well, of course.
I like all the songs.
But as a unit, we're really diverse. I've noticed that. And your father came to one of our band practices recently.
Mm-hmm.
Because he lives in Florida.
And he did. He put it into perspective.
Yeah, and he was like, that was one of our better band practices, too. Because it was like, that was kind of our first audience.
It was. It was like a mini show.
We hadn't played out yet.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this for as long as I live, but the first thing we ever did was tape for television.
Yeah.
And you were like, let me get this straight. We're not going to play a gig in front of a crowd of people.
We're going to be on TV.
We're going to go to a venue set up like we're on stage for a concert, but we're going to play one song for television. And sure enough, that was our introduction.
That was our introduction.
As a band, we made our debut on WNKY, CBS 40, NBC 40.
NBC 40.
And Julie from NBC 40 hosts the scene. A show called The Scene, which is now called Marquee Sunrise. I can't remember.
Not Sunrise, but it's something. But yeah, it's evolved into like a 30-minute show now.
I think so.
Yeah, that's the goal anyway.
I think it's Marquee Showcase.
I think that's what it is.
I did not do my homework on this, but it was called The Scene. Damn it!
The Scene. It was,
and that's what we thought we were going to be on.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, a lot of people have been featured on that channel and on that particular thing. She's been doing that for a few years now.
Yeah, several.
And that is a really cool thing for local bands to get television exposure. You know, and we were one of that was our first thing to do as a band. So we played that and did the taping for that. We did our song called Hot Box.
Yeah. I feel that's kind of equivalent of being thrown to the lions.
It's like going on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Right.
When no one even has your record
yet. No one knows the hell you are.
So we've not recorded an album as of the time we're making this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But we are planning on it. And I know you're really excited about that.
I'm stoked.
And you've done a lot of work to your drum set since you've joined this band.
I have, just to get the...
Got the look, the custom, and drum head with the logo on it. And
yeah.
Are you having fun?
It's at max potential for that drum kit, yeah. No, I'm having a blast. Having a blast.
Musically speaking, is this kind of what you were hoping to find?
Oh, for a long time.
Yeah?
Because it's... You know, I've played in a lot of different bands, you know, some... like light acoustic, you know, alternative acoustic rock with that Evans Link and, you know, the Pig Blues. And,
covered all the four major.
I have. And, but my roots and my passion is hard, fast rock. And that's what we're doing. And so
we've got some of it, and we've also got some other things.
Right.
But
just loud.
We definitely know how to rock.
Right. But just loud rock and roll. And so that's where I'm most comfortable at.
And even like the jazz and the blues song that we have, like to me, it's still got some grip to it. Like it's still edgy and heavy, you know, but it's got those elements of blues and jazz. And I find that awesome. And then we've got songs that are straight up punk rock. We've got songs that are just hardcore heavy metal, early heavy metal sounding. Yeah. Not fast heavy metal, thrash metal, but like, I swear we have this one song that, in my opinion, it's Black Sabbath.
And
total ripoff Black Sabbath.
It totally is.
Didn't mean to do that. It's just, Seth writes really good riffs that like have early Sabbath sound and feel.
And with my father, who grew up in that era of Black Sabbath, after we played that song, that's the first thing he said. Wow, that's really Black Sabbath.
We're going to owe them some money.
Right. Can we say that on air? Black Sabbath?
Yeah, we can say anything.
All right.
We just can't play it.
Right.
You want me to play War Pigs?
No.
On the bass guitar?
Right.
Well, Corey, what one thing that we talked about earlier that we will touch on again is you build custom skateboards.
I do.
And you're really good at it. Are you one of the few local guys that are into that or that do that, that you know of?
You know, I meet a lot of people at the skate park. And, you know, when you meet new people, you kind of introduce yourself, talk, you know, interest, things like that. And I've come across a few people that dabble in that and always looking for information of, well, how do you do this and how do you do that? You know, how to do it something better than what they're doing.
I mean, do you build these from scratch wood?
Like
shaping and everything, or do you just order kits?
No. I build the plies. You know, you get the veneers and you press them and you get the shape, and then you you stencil on the shape you want the board and you cut it out and you sand it and you know, it's from scratch.
That's cool.
So,
and how long have you been doing that?
Man, I think now between 5 and 6 years is when I did my very first board and was like, this is cool. I'm going to keep on doing it.
Cool. And you've got, obviously, I'm assuming on your Facebook page, like links to show that. I swear, every time I say that.
No, it's I really don't have anything on my Facebook.
Do you have a link?
Yeah.
Do you have a link?
No.
Is there any kind of online thing that people
most
can find?
Most every board I've made, I post on my Instagram, and that's just under my name, Corey Link.
Okay, so if anyone's interested in seeing your work and possibly placing an order for a custom made skateboard, a Link skateboard, the best option is to find you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But clearly you're on Facebook.
Oh, too. Absolutely, yeah.
And the Facebook page is more about your home and family life and your band. But obviously you can just, you're easy to find.
Yes. Either way, you can contact me and say, hey, I'm interested, and let's get something.
Let's do this thing.
Right.
Let's go skating.
Yeah.
Let's go to the roller rink.
Right.
On a skateboard.
But I will put out this little disclosure. I mainly like to make longboards and old school cruisers, something with character.
Ah.
You know, because those are the things that have different shapes and different lengths and different, you know.
Right.
They've all got something personal and different and got some character to them. I don't really make a lot of the popsicle shape boards. If you want one of those,
that's like a standard. So go to Howard's.
Right. You know, that's your standard park board.
Does Howard's still deal with skateboards?
Oh, yeah.
They do bikes and skateboards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have not been in that place in 20 years.
I try to get most of my supplies from Howard's, you know, always local.
Yeah.
And every now and then I'll get on the interwebs. And
the Al Gore internet,
right? And order some stuff, but
you're easy to find, and contact if anyone out there wants a custom made skateboard by you.
Yeah.
It is a Link skateboard.
It is.
You have T-shirts and swag to go with your skateboard.
I've got hats and T-shirts and hoodies, and
it's awesome. Yeah. I have a Link skateboard T-shirt that you gave to me, and I love it.
Yeah. What size hoodie do you wear?
I'm a big boy. I eat a lot of tacos.
Will you say
I usually
extra
wear
large?
A 2X.
A 2X? Oh, okay.
But you don't have to gift me a hoodie.
I just came
across. It's too hot right now.
Well, I know, but it's going to get cooler. I just came across an extra large hoodie. So.
Oh, well, you should give it away to a fan.
I might.
But that is a cool thing about you, my friend, because you build skateboards, and skateboards and music go hand in hand.
They do.
Boom, I'm done putting that together. What a link. I like that. I can't say anything without using your actual last name, which is a great last name.
I kind of like it.
It sounds very...
I kind of like it. It goes good on particular things.
So before we wrap this up, one of my favorite things to do... Well, first of all, I have to ask you this question. Is there anything I've missed? Is there anything that you wanted to talk about driving over here to do this? And you're like, I really can't wait to tell the story about the time I went to see... some band, and it was awesome.
No.
You got nothing.
I got nothing. I mean, I wish there was a time I could say, you know, I went to a Foo Fighters, and I held up a sign saying I can play that song, and he got me up on stage to do that.
Yeah.
He does that
all
the time.
I went to a Foo Fighters. I did not play drums with him, but I hung out with him backstage.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you bastard.
They played at the Starwood Amphitheater.
Uh-huh. Starwood.
It was a Starwood, and it was the Chili Peppers and the Foo Fighters in 1999.
So was that the first album?
No, this was the...
second album.
This was the 1x1 record.
1x1? 99 was 1x1?
No, 99.
That's what I said.
I know, but was it 1x... What? No, that was before that. Crap. Okay, I know what it was. It was the third album.
Okay.
And that would be Nothing Left to Lose. And the reason why I know this is because they had Chris on guitar, but he didn't play on the record.
Hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? Learning to Fly.
That record.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was that tour, and it was the Foo Fighters and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I had backstage passes because I knew Chad Smith well enough to call him and say,
"You know Chad
hey,
Smith?
Hey, Chad, while you're in town, can you hook us up with some backstage passes?" God. And he did. And so me and my brother went and had backstage passes to watch this show. Well, the Foo Fighters played first, and before they went on, they had Peter Frampton in their backstage room, and they were like, "You got to come out and do Show Me the Way." And he did, and they rehearsed it backstage, and I watched this happen, and it was the coolest thing. And so they go out and do their show. I went out to my seat, which I had a regular ticket that came with the thing. So I had like row F. I was like really close. And I watched most of the show. And then I went backstage and watched Frampton come out and do Show Me the Way with the Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like the way they ended their show. And it was awesome. And then we got to watch the Chili Peppers from, like, I was standing behind Flea's amp while the Chili Peppers played.
Wow.
And they had Frusciante back. Yeah. It was great. It was Californication.
Yeah, this may be a little selfish, but when do I start seeing some of the perks of the people you know?
You're still new to my realm, you know? I just got you a gig at the exit really, end, wow. Dude. Come on, what do you want?
That's pretty awesome, though.
Yeah.
I'm grateful.
It's cool. It's cool to know people. I worked for a drum magazine, so we had contacts. Wow. I got to see Pearl Jam there, too, with Sonic Youth backstage passes.
Man.
Enough about me.
Crazy.
So, Corey,
yep.
Here's the one question I like to ask everybody before I shut it down.
All right, what is it?
Local music speaking in the Bowling Green music scene.
Yeah.
Who are you a fan of, past or present, and what are you into? Past or present.
Past or present.
Obviously, you've already mentioned Radioactive Flowers.
Yeah.
You cannot deny that. It was a great band.
Yeah.
Especially ruling the scene in the mid to late 90s.
They did rule the scene back then.
But who else out there are you a fan of and maybe go out to see when you're free and available?
Well, honestly, the only other time I have time to see bands, you know, I've heard a lot about them. I've listened to some of their stuff on the radio, not the radio, but on the interwebs.
The Al Gore internet.
The Al Gore internet.
Get right. AGTV.
I really enjoy listening to the Japanese schoolgirls.
Oh yeah,
I do. Yeah, but I haven't seen them play live yet.
Oh, they're amazing.
And I really that's right now. I really want to see them play.
Damn, yeah, yeah, you need to do that.
Uh-huh.
They're really awesome. Yeah.
But of course, I love Peter the Freshman. And
you're only saying that because Seth is in the band.
No, but my wife and I both liked them before we knew anyone in the band.
Right.
But
it's hard not to, man. They're great.
But Carrie, my wife, she knew Josh from high school. She kind of grew up in went to school with Josh Hines, and knows him from back then. So,
right.
You know, and she's the one that introduced me to Peter the Freshman. But and I like '90s, but I like their version of '90s.
Oh yeah, they do
because it's mainly really you know the harder stuff.
They really
stuff.
Yeah. tap into yeah. the. They're in the right element.
Yes.
Of what absolutely. '90s band uh-huh. should be. Uh-huh.
And so, and then for the future, I guess I hope that, man, maybe selfish again, but I hope that the band that I'm in gets to be to the point where that's the band people want to come see.
I'm a terrible singer, so I can't guarantee that, but I'll try.
You got to have more.
I got to have more.
You got to have more faith in yourself. Come on.
Well, I just need to have more. I don't need faith. I need more.
Mm-hmm.
More power.
Yeah. But I think Bowling Green has a really awesome music scene.
We do. And you and I are part of it. And we are in a band together. And
right.
It's really weird to be the host of a podcast interviewing my bandmate about local music.
Right, but you knew it. You knew that at some point you're going to have to because I was going to.
Well, yeah, because we talked about it a long time ago, and I was like, "Yeah, you totally have to do it."
Right, I want
to
be on your show.
Everybody that's a musician needs to do this in this area. It's the point of this thing. So, thank you, Corey Link.
No, thank you, Dean, for having me.
And keep doing what you're doing.
I'm gonna try.
I'll see you at band practice, and I'll see you on stage.
Thursday.
Well, this will air way after that.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
We are literally 48 hours away from stepping foot on stage at the Exit Inn.
At the Exit Inn.
This is a dream come true for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we never, ever, ever thought we would ever play the Exit Inn.
Yeah, it's a bucket list. It
with
is.
With a band that has been together for 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I saw one of the bands I learned about and heard through my skateboarding magazines. Oh, yeah? And stuff.
I asked this question like an hour ago.
Yeah, but the Donnas, you know,
yes!
I saw them there for the first time.
That's awesome.
That was an awesome show.
I bet. They're an awesome band.
They played with OK Go.
Oh, dude.
And, man, what was it? I've got all three of the albums that they were promoting that night, but I forget the third band.
Who else have you seen at the Exit Inn while we're on the subject of the fact that we in El Astronauta get to play the Exit Inn opening for Solar Disco for us? Who have you seen at the Exit Inn?
Believe it or not, that's the only time I've been to the Exit Inn.
Oh, Corey Link. Shame on you. You know who I've seen at the Exit Inn? I've seen Mike Watt.
Uh-huh.
I have seen Fear. I have seen what was that band that Stephen Perkins was in? Jane's Addiction drummer Stephen Perkins. Oh, he had a band called Banyan.
Banyan.
And it was like this really cool avant-garde, like tribal music.
Ooh.
But with like a full drum kit and everything, right? Like that.
I like tribal beats.
I saw the Misfits.
Misfits.
The lineup with Jerry Only and kind of like the newer lineup before Glenn came back.
Mm-hmm.
Golly, I'd have to dig up a lot of ticket stubs, but I've seen some killer shit there.
Yeah.
And I can't remember all of it, but it was a lot. Exit Inn's a legendary place.
From what I understand, we're
going to leave there with a record deal.
Yeah.
We're going to be the biggest pop punk, weird heavy metal band to ever come out of Nashville. We're going to end up moving to Nashville and becoming superstars.
Oh, traffic there is terrible.
No, it's not. Why does everybody say that? Traffic in Nashville is terrible if you're on the interstate or 440. Get off of those things. Learn the back roads. Do you realize that 31W turns into 8th Avenue South? You realize this, right?
Does it really?
You realize that 31E turns into...
I didn't realize
like,
that.
4th Avenue becomes Nolensville Road. It's no different than driving on Scottsville Road, except it's a bigger city and the lights are actually synced together and they all turn green and you can go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Nashville's not as bad as... You all are crazy. You've never driven through Boston, have you?
No.
Well, if you go drive through Boston, you'll never complain about Nashville traffic.
I've taken a taxi through New York City.
That's crazy.
That is insane.
We drove through Manhattan.
Our cab driver was trying to kill us, I swear.
Why?
Oh, he was,
because you were from Kentucky.
Yeah, and he was insane, trying to in and out and honking, and yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Hmm.
Just like the movies.
Just like New York.
It was just like New York.
Welcome to New York.
Yeah.
Well, Corey Link, we're gonna say goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Because it looks like you need to pee, and you're very uncomfortable and restless. But I like for these to go very long and lengthy because it gives people something to do.
It's for an hour and
while
a half.
They're at work.
All right.
It's true. Podcasts aren't supposed to be 20 minutes long. They're supposed to be entertaining.
Well, I hope this was entertaining.
It was entertaining. And when you listen back to it, you'll be surprised.
I hope you learned everything about me you needed to.
I did.
Okay.
I feel like I talk too much, but that's pretty common. I'm the host.
You're supposed to.
I'm supposed to have the most.
I'm mosting. Ask me the questions.
Very mosting.
Right.
Corey Link, one more time, drummer for El Astronauta.
Yes, sir.
And the future is looking bright for us, because I can say that because I'm in that band with you.
That is correct.
Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being my bandmate.
Thank you for auditioning me.
Thank you for not quitting yet. Because you will.
No, I don't think so. I like the position that I'm in right now.
You're in a good position.
I am.
Hold it.
I will, as long as I can.
Don't move. Bye.
See ya.